Blog Talk Radio.
Alright. Welcome everybody to another edition of the Wednesday Night Food Fight with your host Johnny Hartwell. Alongside me as always, Cole Invicta. What's going on, man?
Just listening to a show.
Let me fucking bang, bro. Let me bang, man.
Bro, I let you bang, bro.
Let you bang, bro.
Bro, gonna bang again, bro.
Bro, I want to bang. Let me fucking bang again, bro.
Let me bang, bro.
Oh, man. That has to be the most hilarious moment in Ultimate Fighter history. I don't care what I say. Yeah, man. So what's going on, man?
Nothing much. Just getting myself ready with my turducken. Got it cooking in the refrigerator right now. How do you cook a turducken in a refrigerator? How the hell do you fucking put three crazy-ass meats together and call it an actual food? That's how. Today, Johnny, is pre-Thanksgiving. I don't know, I already told you that Charlie Brown is going on certain networks right over here in the States. So that means tomorrow we're going to have to watch something that we don't want to see. Because it's right now they're showing Charlie Brown Thanksgiving on where I live at over here in the East Coast, bro.
Man, it better be on tomorrow. Before we kick off the show, just want to say, you know, Hector Camacho is still in a critical condition. He's on life support right now after being shot in the face and neck. So our thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family. Hopefully he makes it through. But we got a lot to talk about, man. We got, we're going to recap. We got UFC 154, Return of GSP, Legacy Fight Championships 15, Bellator 81, much more. Martial arts. How do you feel about this UFC 154 card? Was just crazy. Mostly decision.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And 12 fights, 8 of them went the distance, but most of those were some pretty entertaining fights. And starting off with the prelims, we had Super Steven Seiler taking on Darren the Damage Elkins. Elkins won this fight by unanimous decision, all three judges scoring at 30-27. And Elkins was just on him the whole fight. Took him down a few times. He was working for submission after submission. There was pretty much nothing Seiler can do. Just a dominant performance by Darren Elkins. Our submission of the night came in a fight between the Pride of El Salvador, Ivan Menjivar. He took on Azamat Gashimov. And Ivan basically, Azamat took him down. Ivan went for the armbar, and Azamat shook it off, but fell right back into it. And he tried so hard to get out of it, tried throwing Menjivar off, even tried slamming him down, but Menjivar wasn't letting go of that arm. And it looked like Gashimov may have even dislocated his shoulder. It looked pretty nasty on the way he went down. He was forced to tap at the 244 mark of the first round. How do you feel about that submission?
It's crazy how a guy like Gashimov has the nickname Tough Guy. So, you know, you think when he comes in, he's 7-1. His only loss came from head kick. You would think, you know, he would give you something. He would advise you with something besides 2 minutes and 44 seconds of just getting destroyed and submitted half near to death, shoulder separated, arm damage. I mean, this guy was in bad shape. This was his first show and probably his last show in the UFC. And Gashimov, it was just a terrible look to hit that octagon for your first time. Andujar's got like 1,050 wins over like 2 losses. He's 25-9, so I mean, this guy's no joke. He's not the first guy that armbarred him. You know, he done rear naked choke John Albert, Charlie Valencia, elbows and punches. So, I mean, this guy's been fighting some good names. So, I mean, this was a definite good win for Menjivar. Nice, short, probably went to the bar after. This seems to be the best thing to do after a short fight, get a couple of drinks that they pay for, of course.
Right. Next one, Matt Deepwater's Riddle take on John the One McGuire. Riddle won this fight by unanimous decision. 2 judges scored it 30-27. Basically, it was 3 rounds of Matt Riddle outstriking the shit out of McGuire, showing excellent takedown defense. And that was pretty much it. He pushed the action the whole time. It wasn't a great fight, but McGuire, I don't know why he still has a job in the octagon.
Since he beat DeMarcus Johnson, that's most likely why he has it. I mean, John McGuire back in the day, you know, he was somebody decent because, you know, he did fight in UFC quite a few times, but now he is a matter of competition has raised for him a little bit. He is finding himself on the losing end of quite a few fights. Matt Riddle, he's a young guy. I definitely remember, you know, I've seen quite a few of his fights. Got 7-3. Crazy. He got his fight with Chris Clements. That was overturned on some bull-ish back there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, this win is definitely going to going to help him out. And, again, same thing with him. As this competition has risen, I mean, I'm taking it back to when he fought Henry Martinez and he got that split decision win. You can get him some tougher competition. Since about 2010, you know, he lost to Sean Pearson. He lost to Benoist or Benoit. So, you know, you got 2 choices when your competition gets bigger. Either you get better, or you're going to do like all the names that we see lose, the John McGuires and all of them, and you just get fired.
Hmm.
He's doing good things, Matt Riddle. He's turning that negative into a positive, you know, from those 2 losses in 2010 and 2011. So, I mean, he did what I expected him to do. You know, he messes with a team throwdown. He's from Pennsylvania, which is a really heavy country for wrestling. So, you know, if that's what you're good at, you gotta stress what you're good at and try to, you know, improve on what you're not so good at. Everything that he did in this fight, so I have no bad words for him in this fight, Matt Riddle. 30-27, for sure. Beat the shit out of him. Loved it.
Right on. The next one was Rodrigo Dam taking on Antonio Carvalho. The first round was basically Carvalho battering the shit out of Rodrigo's leg. Second round, Dam controlled the action on the ground, tagged Antonio a few times in a stand-up. Third round, Dam's leg was just a battered mess. He took some chances coming forward with his strikes, but Antonio continued to work the leg. But Dam was all over him in that round. They scored this split decision for Antonio Carvalho, which that fight could have honestly went either way, but do you think Carvalho deserved this victory, or do you think Dam did enough in the closing minutes of the fight?
Dam did a whole lot. He definitely, in that last round, he did everything that he felt as though he should have done in the first 2 rounds. The only issue is that all that he did in the 3rd round, he didn't do in the first 2 rounds. So, yeah, I'm going to give it to I keep calling him Antonio Banuelos because that's what he came out looking like. But it was an interesting fight. It was extremely hard to call. Like, when I listened to the judges, there was really no way they could have got this right or wrong, seeing as we have the most bullshit, stupid, retarded judges in the system of all sports. It wouldn't have mattered what would have happened. Nobody really loses because the only way everybody would have been right is if this was a draw. But I don't feel as though this was a draw. I think Carvalho did enough in the first 2 rounds to warrant that split decision victory. But damn it, if Rodrigo Dam didn't give us that Brazilian just fantasticness in that third round. I mean, the way he was fighting in that third round, you would think that Anderson Silva was going to come out and just start crying in Brazilian. You know, just start bawling out crying. Because, I mean, that was an inspiring third round. Yeah. Still, Carvalho deserved the win, but if this went like five rounds or something, I think Dam had the ability to bring it back. Rodrigo, goddamn, his record is really not looking too great right now. He got the crap kicked out of him with Strikeforce challengers. He got punched in the face on Sengoku, and now he got a split decision loss on UFC. He's not looking too good right now. He's going to have to come up with at least two wins in his next two fights without question. His next loss, he'll be going back to Sengoku, or there won't be Strikeforce when if he loses. So, I mean, pretty much he has to win. There's really no place else for him to go at this moment. At least not getting that UFC money, whatever it is. I don't even know Carvalho. I know Rodrigo Dam, we talked about him quite a few times during the Brazilian season of The Ultimate Fighter. That's the only reason I remember Rodrigo Dam so well. Carvalho, it's funny. He's got a Spanish name, but he's from Canada.
Yeah.
He's got two UFC wins and one UFC loss. So, I mean, right now he's looking good. Especially with that knockout of Daniel Pineda in that first round back at UFC 149. So, I mean, yeah.
Yo, sweet.
He's looking real good right now.
Yo, moving on to our next one. We had,
this was another kind of crazy fight. That Sam Handelstone's out taking on John the Bull McDessie. Basically, this was three rounds of Sam Stout pushing forward with his striking ability. But John, he used his jab effectively throughout the entire fight and found it almost easy to counter-strike Stout anytime Stout came in close to distance. Well, I honestly have no problem with the judges giving this to John McDessie by unanimous decision. Two of them gave him all three rounds. One saw 29-28. I mean, Sam was aggressive, but McDessie was just a better fighter in this one. Well, what was your take on it, Cole?
For Sam Stout, there's a difference between aggressive and headstrong. Basically, he's just that retarded horse that's 850 pounds just being force-fed water. I mean, how could he not see McDessie was counter-striking? He backs up, he hits him in the face. The difference between running away and getting the shit kicked out of you is only in one of them do you receive damage. Sam Stout must have ate way too many punches to the head to not realize how many hits he was receiving by McDessie. I mean, he was just it was a freaking constellation find, and he just found the Big Dipper on his forehead and face all the time. Sam Stout had so much crap to say after losing so bad. I mean, this is one of those times where you just, when they ask you a question, it was a good fight, I enjoyed it, or some shit like that. Hands of Stone, huh? That's his nickname? His hands were basically useless. He might as well have just taped his hands behind his back and just let McDessie keep beating on him the way he did. This was like a landslide victory election style. This was horrible. This is what I'm watching right now. I'm watching a little bit of wrestling on TV trying to catch up. This is kind of when the person who you want to see when he wins. This was just 30-27. I don't know what that third judge was seeing, but it was 30-27, no matter how you look at it. Sam Stout literally did nothing. He got a paycheck to get the shit kicked out of him. Sam Stout is going nowhere. I mean, unless he gathers up a hell of a lot of wins really quick. They don't make enough events in the UFC right now. I mean, with the injury time and all of that, they don't make enough events for Sam Stout to basically create a resurgence in his career by the next year, by 2013. So, yeah. McDessie's moving a step up. Sam Stout is now a step down. He's almost in Melvin Gillard country.
Damn.
Going into McDessie real quick. He got beat by Anthony Njukawani. That's not an embarrassment. Anthony Njukawani is one of the best fighters I know. And Dennis Holman, he rear naked choked him. Hey, shit happens. I still look at as Mac Desi as definitely moving a step in the right direction. Before those two losses that he had, he was like 9-0. So, I mean, he was looking really good. And now that with this win in UFC 154, you know, he's back where he needs to be. Is he at the top? Not even close. But he's working his way towards the top of the middle. In that division, 155, that's a good place to be. You don't want to be up there with the Ben Hendersons and the Nate Diazes getting the shit kicked out of you. Let him stay where he's at. Let him get better, you know?
Yeah, for our next one, we had
Cyril the Snake Diabate taking on Chad Gravedigger Greaves. Yeah, man. You know, I almost didn't do it. This almost went to Mark Hominick. But yes, Chad Greaves, you have just become our horrible fighter of the week. I mean, this guy, he rushed in on Diabate, got caught with a straight left. He managed to get up just to get taken down. Diabate quickly got his back. I mean, Griggs was just a bloody mess already. Griggs escaped the choke, but Diabate dragged his ass back to the ground, got his back again, quickly locked in a rear naked choke, barely torqued on it maybe 3 seconds. And Griggs was forced to tap at the 224 mark of the first round. Cyril Diabate wins this one by submission. Chad Griggs, as most people know, is from Strikeforce. He had an 11-1 record heading into the UFC. He wasn't so much of a great fighter. He destroyed the hype train of Bobby Lashley. He whooped on Valentin Overeem. And then he comes to the UFC, and what does he do? He gets submitted in the first round, twice, back-to-back. One at heavyweight, and then he drops down, and the same shit happens. What the hell was he thinking rushing in on a guy like Cyril Diabate? I know I picked Chad Griggs last week. Yeah, I screwed up with that shit. But you don't rush in on a guy like Cyril Diabate. This guy was an amazing kickboxer. He has over 41 wins, 31 of them by knockout. He has 19 wins in MMA, 8 of them by knockout. This is not a guy that you want to take lightly. And Chad Griggs, you are the recipient of the Horrible Fighter of the Week Award. What do you got to say about this one, Cole?
I agree he deserves that that prestigious title. Cyril Diabate really made him look like a straight loser, chump. This is one of those guys, I don't care what his record was before, to lose twice, like consecutively, yeah. His career is definitely taking a turn for the worse. And Diabate has got like the negative 3 of 3. He's got a stupid nickname, Snake. He's from fucking France, too. And he's damn near 40 years old. Chad Griggs has none of that. Chad Griggs, doesn't matter what his name is. Griggs got a cool nickname. He's from Arizona, where Gomac Joe Calderon comes from. He wins before these losses. So all the good things on paper about Chad Griggs and the bad things about the Cyril Diabate didn't translate. Chad Griggs, basically, he must have took those 11 wins and didn't realize that he had 2 losses. Consecutively. Well, no, you're right. He punched Valentin Overeem in the face. Let's get into Valentin Overeem. He's a nobody. He's Alistair's brother who lacks every bit of talent that you can even pretend that Overeem has. So that's worth nothing. It's not worth shit. So get choked out by Travis Brown. That's one peg down at you already. And then you get rear naked choked by Cyril Diabate. That Chad Griggs. They named him the Gravedigger because he is literally digging his own grave from the UFC. And when he gets kicked out, they're not letting him back. He'll never come back. This is another guy. When Strikeforce closes their doors tomorrow, if they haven't closed them already, this guy's going to really be running around like a chicken with his head cut off, wondering where the hell can I go. It sucks. It sucks for Chad Griggs because, remember, at one time he was damn near unstoppable. But remember, this was kind of in Strikeforce, so you got to kind of realize Strikeforce Challengers isn't exactly the greatest organization to scoop your fighters from, unless your goal is for them to lose. Because so many Strikeforce Challengers have just been brutally mauled and destroyed. The only name Strikeforce really has that's really worth anything besides Gegard Mousasi is going to be, who UFC already has, not his freaking name, beat up Josh Barnett. I keep watching out. Daniel Cormier.
Damn.
That's really all they have right now. But that's something we can get into at a later time.
Yeah, I pulled out the prelim. We had Patrick the Fraser Cote taking on Alessio Legionarius Sakara. Cote, in his tight little flurry, landed some pretty big shots. Sakara seemed to be real hurt at the time. The crowd was just getting super amped. Sakara recovered pretty quickly, got against the cage. He landed some big shots of his own, landed at least two or three elbows straight to Cote, dropped him. And then what does he do? He nails Cote in the back of the head at least five or six times, just hammer fist him. Of course Cote is going to go out. It's the back of his head. The referee called this fight at the 126 mark. After further review, they decided to award the win to Patrick Cote by disqualification, which I extremely agree with, because one of the worst calls ever was when Mario Yamasaki disqualified Eric Silva for his one accidental shot to the back of the head. So if Sakara can land five or six, we better call that a disqualification. But not to take the fact that he was beating the shit out of Cote before that happened. So Cote can't be too happy about it. But what's your take on it, Cole?
They let me know how Dan Mergliotta is one of the best referees in all of mixed martial arts. If it was Kim Winslow, Sakara would have got murdered. I mean, Kim Winslow would have let him eat at least 80 or 90 shots to the back of his freaking head. I mean, it was a good fight. It was a very short fight, and it was full of a whole bunch of just, you know, twist rounds. Because, you know, it started off with Cote making the magic happen, and Sakara just, you know, Sakara came back, and, you know, it was just a back and forth.
Yeah.
There are people who don't agree with what we just said, where those punches to the back of the head, they definitely warranted a stop of the fight. Because these weren't just pitter-patter punches to the head. This was just like he came from the top of the fucking octagon, got on the helicopter, and freaking Mission Impossible dived and hit him in the freaking back of the head at least five times. You got people who are going to say there were two, there were three. They're splitting apples and oranges. He destroyed the back of this dude's head. I mean, I'm talking, how many drinks do you have to take to receive brain damage like that? And you can just watch his body like, this is not the way my head is supposed to be hit. You know, remember, this is mixed martial arts. They have a whole code of ethics and conduct, and you're not supposed to hit people in the back of the head or kick them in the nuts or none of that stuff. One of those rules were broken, and now, you know, there are certain people out there that say, oh, it's okay to punch somebody in the head. So, I mean, basically, if I north-south hit somebody with an elbow to the face, and you find the right ref, it should all be okay. No. Nobody should get the benefit to the rule. He hit this dude in the back of the head a lot. Directly to the back of the head. This wasn't side shots, front shots. He was aiming for that freaking forehead. It was like when you watch a certain sport and they take that little piece off of the turnbuckle and the metal is exposed. It's like he threw the back of his head into that. It was not great. But they made the right choice. I'm glad they made the choice. It doesn't matter what I say because they will be fighting again, Patrick Cote and Alessio Sakara. So hopefully we actually get to see what could have actually happened.
I've seen it.
Because what could have happened could have been Cote could have really knocked him flat. Sakara could have actually, instead of hitting him in the back of the head, he could have twisted a little bit and hit him in the side of the head. I mean, this fight could have ended in so many different ways, so I'm glad that we're going to get the opportunity here. let them fight, you know, one more time with no hits to the back of the head, hopefully.
Man,
that
would be nice. That was ridiculous. His camp is trying to appeal the loss, which I think is hilarious. But whatever. I've never known an appeal to work, even when the fighter was in the right. So good luck with that.
Hey, maybe he can call Chael Sonnen or something like that. Have him go to the courtroom for him. Who's he appealing this with? With the UFC? They don't even answer my phone calls. What the hell makes you think they're going to pay attention to any of the bullshit that you or your camp says? Unless you can have Dan Henderson, Randy Couture, and Cecil Peoples. I said Cecil Peoples. Unless you can have those three people come in and represent you in the courtroom, shut your damn mouth and accept your loss. Dude, you lost. So what? It happens.
Yes, it is.
Appeal. I'm going to appeal his appeal because it's bullshit.
Man. All right, let's start this main card. Pablo the Scarecrow Garza taking on Mark the Machine Hominick, who should drop his nickname. I mean, Hominick, the first round, he pushed the action, but Garza countered him with a steady barrage of punches, kicks, and knees. Hominick found his range of punches for a bit, but this was Garza's opportunity to go for a takedown. Hominick was the one who ended up on top, where he fought hard to get an armbar. But eventually, Garza escaped. They stood up. Hominick nailed Garza with a left hook to the body. Somehow, he immediately got back to his feet. He nailed Hominick with his wild right that cut open Hominick above his left eye. Second round was Garza controlling the fight mostly on the ground. Hominick did a good job avoiding all of Garza's punches and elbows and also looking for a potential submission, but it really doesn't help you when you're fighting off your back the entire time. And you know how these judges are when a fight goes to the ground. They don't give a shit about you. Third round, Hominick came out swinging, knowing that he probably needed a finish to win. Garza, of course, opted to take him down. Hominick avoided very little damage, but once again, being in the bottom position does not help you in the eyes of the judges. And Pablo Garza was awarded a unanimous decision with three of the oddest scores I ever seen. 29-27, 30-26, and 29-28. Where did Garza lose a point? That's weird. Or was one of those rounds a draw? I don't see how it would have been. But, wow. What do you think about this fight, Cole? Garza's performance.
Fight. Well, we know the fight was great. The fight was great if your name is Pablo Garza. The fight was horrible if your name was Mark Hominick. I heard it's basically like Pablo Garza squeezed a fucking lemon in his face because he couldn't see anything. His eyes was damn near closed. He ate so many punches to the face, it was just unreal. Any other fighter that I could think of, he might just succumb to the pressure. I mean, this was intense, insane punches to the face like I've never seen out of Pablo Garza. I mean, we know about the flying knee back in 2010, and his beautiful submissions and all of that stuff. But this was 15 minutes of just utter destruction. You know, Mark Hominick, he's my boy. You know, he's Canadian. He's got the will. You know, he's got the will. But this was just not his fight. He came out in that second round and definitely tried to, he did the best he could. But, I mean, first round was an emphatic 10-8 for Pablo Garza. That, you know, the second round, you can take it for what it was. But that first round was just really bad. And by the third round, I mean, he could hardly even see. I mean, it's more to the point, he was putting his hand out, pawing it in the third round, just trying to see where Pablo Garza was, just trying to dictate where he was because he was freaking blind. How the doctors could not see that, it still baffles me. It perplexes me. And every round, I'm starting to notice that. The harder the fighter gets beat, because this happened on more than one occasion during this whole UFC, the referee actually goes back to the corner of the person that's receiving most of the damage just to make sure that the fight itself isn't ended. We saw that shit 3 consecutive times or 2 consecutive times. at the end of the first round and at the end of the second round. And shit, I might have seen him in the third round making sure. I mean, Mark Hominick really got beat bad. I mean, this was just, wow. I didn't, this was a new side of Pablo Garza. Not really new per se, but new to the UFC. You know? Because when he came out from the WEC and he had his first fight in the UFC, he gave us excitement. And then after that, you know, we got the usual. He tried to choke Eve Jabouin, but that's not worth anything. Eve Jabouin is straight garbage. And then he lost to Dustin Poirier and Dennis Bermudez. So, yeah, this win, this was like a knockout. Even though it's not on anybody's card, this could have been a TKO because, I mean, he beat him in a way that would have just had other fighters unconscious.
Yeah.
Damn, 145, featherweight. It was a really good fight. I thoroughly enjoyed watching every minute of it. Got kind of sad at the end in the third round, but damn it, it was still a good fight nonetheless. One-sided, that's all.
Yeah, man. Hominick just four straight losses for him in the octagon, so... He might have just seen his last bit of action in the UFC. We'll see what happens. Our next fight, we had Rafael Dos Anjos taking on Mark Bolchek. Right away, Dos Anjos nailed Bolchek with his right hook, and Bolchek was like, oh, hell no. I ain't going to let this dude mess up my face. So right away, he went to tie him up on a cage. Dos Anjos got out of the position with several knees that he threw to the body of Bolchek. And just about every takedown that Bolchek attempted, I lost count. It was so many. Dos Anjos defended every single one of them. Second round, he didn't waste any time. Dos Anjos got a takedown right away. Bolchek was looking for an arm. Dos Anjos turned it around, was looking for a Kimura of his own. They were scrambling on the ground for a bit, both looking for submission after submission. Dos Anjos was just relentless, smashing the shit out of Bolchek's face. Pretty much through the second and third round, Bolchek's face was just a bloody mess. There was nothing he could do in this fight. Easy fight to score unanimously for Rafael Dos Anjos all three rounds. Anything to add to that, Cole?
I was actually expecting the fight to go. I was expecting it to end a whole lot earlier. All those submissions that Dos Anjos was trying to make happen, I mean, it was really exciting. It was exciting in that one-sided kind of way. With this win right here for Rafael Dos Anjos, he beat my boy Njukuwani, which saddened me. He beat the shit. I mean, just killed Kamal Shalarus. Minute 40 seconds, rear naked choking. I mean, it was terrible. And with this destruction of Mark Bolchek, he's definitely working his way, you know, up there in the names. His wins are great, but his losses are going to be what keeps him from the top. Gleison Tibau, for example, that was a horrible loss because, I mean, before that, he was working his way up. Hit George Sideropoulos, and then, you know, he lost because Clay Guida broke his jaw. You can't be mad when somebody's jaw breaks during a fight. You got to stop fighting, or else you'll really receive some damage. Mark Bolchek, as well, for one time, you know, at one time, he was fighting some of the greats. You know, the Ben Hendersons, the Frankie Edgars and all of that, Jim Miller. Yeah, he lost to them all. But just the fact that at one time Mark Bolchek had the opportunity to fight such big fights, to really get destroyed like this, really is going to put an asterisk on his entire career at this point forward. Bolchek has been fighting in the UFC since frickin' 2007. So, I mean, it's not like he just started fighting in the UFC, but never in his career has he really been, you know, put to shame like this. I mean, he was really just, he was put to shame real bad. It's not like he's going to quit or retire or anything like that. He's a young guy, 31, I mean, but he's got to definitely improve his game because this was bad for him.
Man, that's a three-fight win streak for Dos Anjos. Dude's on his way. Couple more wins, he might be cracking in knocking on the door for a title shot. You never know.
For sure.
He's got a way to go, though. Next one, this wasn't a fight I was too excited about watching. We had Francis Carmont taking on Filthy Tom Lawler. Lawler wasted little time pushing inside, working in the clinch. Carmont used some nice kicks to the body. Lawler was looking for a takedown. Carmont showed great takedown defense. Carmont shot for a takedown, laying around, which he fell into an arm-in guillotine choke, but he refused the tap, moved on to the next one. Carmont looked more comfortable, used his reach, land some more kicks from the distance. Lawler finally secured a takedown. Carmont got back up to his feet without taking any damage. Again, Lawler was looking for that arm-in guillotine choke, but didn't have it. Third round, Carmont came out with these powerful kicks. Lawler pushed him against the cage. Neither fighter really absorbed much damage in the round. And Carmont seemed to be mostly on the defense for most of the fight. It was a crazy way to try to score this fight, but the judges had it in favor of Francis Carmont by split decision. It was a close fight, but you think Carmont deserved this victory, or you think Lawler did enough?
Let me make sure I get all my thoughts straight. Francis Limitless Carmont, you piece of garbage, douchebag, shithead, piece of crap. You knew that decision was wrong. Everybody knows that decision was wrong. I'm going to take a second and get into this rant real quick. Because how dare those piece of shit retarded judges get it wrong on two of three occasions. One of those judges actually must have been right there next to the fight. Where the hell were those other two judges? Now, what is it? It's based on three things: is aggression, octagon control, and some other third shit that I can't even remember because I'm in the middle of a rant. Did they not see that fucking Tom Lawler for two of those three rounds, two solid rounds, was consistently doing more? That during the entire first round, Carmont was getting taken down almost freaking at will with those, and Carmont was trying to do those stupid, useless kicks that did nothing. Those kicks did nothing. Francis Carmont did nothing in that third round. I'm going to give him the opportunity and let him know that he had the second round. The only reason Francis Carmont had the second round is because the one takedown that was given was by Carmont in the second round. You know that? Yeah, so he got the second round, but the third round, Tom Lawler beat him. I'm still perplexed on how retarded, on how stupid these judges have to literally be to not just screw the decision up once, but twice. It should have been a unanimous decision, 29-28 by Filthy Tom Lawler. Punches that were delivered, the kicks that were delivered in that first and third round were entirely by Tom Lawler. He did an interview after the fight, and he didn't even understand. This was one of those WTF capitalized with three exclamation points behind it kind of moments. It's just bullish. I'm not even going to give Francis Carmont the benefit of just over-cursing, because this was straight garbage. This was crap. This guy is 6'3", and he was just, like, standing there. He reminds me of Big Baby was his name, the season that Big Country was on. Big Baby, Marcus Davis is his name. He was fighting like him.
Yeah.
And the only difference is that Big Baby, Marcus Davis, could actually come up with a freaking triangle submission. To be so tall and to do no submissions, it really goes to show me that Francis Carmont is just a waste of space to me in this specific fight. He has fought on UFC like four times, and he sucked every time. I don't care that he rear naked choked two guys. Those two guys are freaking nobodies. Who the hell is Magnus Seidenblad and Carlos Lamola? Nobody knows these guys. It seems to me like the judges are trying to catapult a name like Francis Carmont to the top. Tom Lawler is your guy. He gets you filthy. You put him in your freaking bathtub, you just had an episode of Cat in the Hat where you got that big-ass brown ring around your fucking tub. This guy is great. I don't care what his record says. It says that he's 8-5. He's lost against some of the toughest names in that entire division of 185 to me. Chris Beadman, who's your next title contender, and then Joe Dorkson, who in 2010 was definitely a name of notoriety. So, yeah. Francis Carmont, I don't care that the judges gave him the decision. In my eyes, and in 90% of society's eyes, that was straight utter bullcrap. Bullcrap. Damn it, I know I'm right.
Yeah, like, wow. I don't know. That's just crazy. I don't
understand this Francis Carmont hype at all. I mean, yeah, he's riding a 9-5 win streak. Two of them went the distance, but who's he beating? No one, really. I mean,
he sure as shit didn't beat Tom Lawler.
Hell no. Hell no. That was a bullshit decision. I mean, I can almost give him the Chris Camozzi. Camozzi ain't nobody great, but he's not a piece of shit like Carmont fought like in this fight. You know, like, Tom Lawler.
Yeah, but I mean, honestly, Johnny, Carmont is not going to get all of the blame. Because I think, you know, Tom Lawler, he could have done a little more. But, I mean, damn it, Tom Lawler is like 5'8", and this Carmont guy is like 6'3". The stupidest thing he could have possibly done would have been just to get directly in his guard and start landing punches. Everybody realizes when you've got a 5-inch disadvantage in the height and in the reach, you got to get in when you fit in. You can't just stay there. So I feel as though Tom Lawler had a smart game plan, and maybe the judges were too effing stupid, too retarded, too hopped up on freaking legal weed from Colorado or Washington to not realize what a freaking real decision is or what it looks like. Come on.
Man,
what a terrible decision.
Leaves us.
If you didn't hate judges before this, Johnny, I'm sorry, my last statement. If you didn't hate judges before this, just watch this entire fight. Listen to those three retards' names that they put on the card. Listen to their decision, and you'll understand why it is that I hate judges so much.
Man, this is why the most repeated and greatest quote in MMA history is never leave it in the hands of the judges. Lawler fought this fight thinking that he could win by decision. That's what I saw. I saw him having a mindset that he will win the fight by decision. And boy, he was sadly mistaken. Oh, man, what a fight. Our co-main event, which was the knockout of the night. This shit was fucking amazing. Martin Hitman Cannon taking on Johnny Big Ray Hendricks. Shout out to all the Johnnies out there. I mean, there's not a whole lot to say about it, except Hendricks dropped Cannon with this big left hook, almost the exact mirror image of his knockout victory over John Fitch. One follow-up punch later, the referee said, okay, that's enough. 46 seconds into the first round. Fear the beard. I will never say anything bad about Johnny Hendricks. I never have, except the fight with Koscheck. I thought he could have lost that one, but...
Correct, he lost.
That knockout, wow. Fucking Martin Cameron, he almost made me cry, but that knockout was so awesome. I just shake the shit out of my homeboy Earl. But how do you feel about that knockout, Cole?
This fight took me back in NCAA college football. Back when Oklahoma was number one, and they just came in and just had these, like, 86-3 victories over these freaking no-name teams. But this was actually as if he got a it was like, there was a young guy who just scored 139 points. On college basketball. It kind of reminded me of that. Because that punch that was delivered by frickin' Johnny Hendricks was like a one shot. This was like a slam dunk. It was a come-from-behind touchdown from the zero-yard line. Basically, the ball was kicked all the way into the field. You could damn near see the white line, you know, from the touchback line, from the safety. He took that shit back 109 frickin' yards and scored a touchdown. He couldn't be stopped. He was like the little girl that's on the Wheaties commercial that's about to be on the Wheaties cereal box. There's this young girl who plays college football. Not college. She's a kid. She's like 10, 9 years old. I don't even know the name of the little girl. But I mean, she just makes this magic happen. Basically, Johnny Hendricks, in reference to Johnny, he saw that face and he hit that face. It was so fast. I mean, I couldn't turn around. I couldn't even catch my breath. It was so fast, I damn near had to put a freaking ventilator to my face, an oxygen mask. I thought the freaking captain of the airplane was going to call me and say we're experiencing turbulence on Martin Campman's face, because it was terrible. It was terrible and beautiful at the same time. For people who were betting people, most of them went for Martin Campman because Campman, he wasn't just a nobody. He wasn't the number 150 player in a team of 151. This guy was definitely working his way up. He needs Jake Ellenberger to the face. And to my recollection, Ellenberger was supposed to be the next man in line. Basically, if Ellenberger would have beat him as bad as Campman beat Ellenberger, you know, if it went in reverse, we would have seen Ellenberger working his way damn near next to a title shot.
Yeah.
I mean, this was really bad because he beat up on Rick Story and everybody loved that fight. That was a great fight. Then he guillotine choked Thiago Alves, which was just as lovely. Then he kneed freaking Jake Ellenberger in the face. So Campman was like, he was your go-to guy. I wasn't going to say he was the next in line, but definitely he was a name for discussion. Until second 46. In second 46, he was looking at the light. I mean, I could have swore that I saw him saying, I'm coming home, mama, because this was one of those walk away from the light kind of moments. Damn, Johnny Hendricks. What can I really say about him? That was a crazy knockout, and he seems to be making a habit of just knocking the shit out of good names. Because you know John Fitch, you know, as I call him, son of a fish, when he kneed him in the face, that was one of the most beautiful knockouts I saw. I mean, unless you want to go back to where he beat the crap out of T.J. Wahlberger. I mean, Johnny Hendricks is just, even if he's a one-hit wonder, fuck that shit. Who let the dogs out? You know, let's take it back to 2010 because his hits are just like, they keep on coming. I mean, I felt like I was listening to all of those one-hit wonders, Spice Girls, Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, all in one beautiful, beautiful shot to the face. Where that other shot came in, who cares? They could have called the fight from that moment. I mean, his whole body just seized and convulsed in Martin Campman. And yes, I'm spending a lot of time on this beauty, on this gorgeousness, on this freaking artwork, because that's exactly what it was, because I feel as though this deserves all the accolades. Johnny Hendricks now was on freaking five solid, solid wins. I mean, these wins are really good for him. This 170-pound division is definitely one of the toughest divisions in the entire history of the UFC. You know, I mean, of all the divisions, 170 is definitely got some of the toughest names and some of the craziest, greatest victories out there. So, I mean, would I tell GSP to look out? Shit, no. But, hey, watch the fight, I would say, but not really look out for him because Big Rig Johnny Hendricks got just a bit of a way to go before he gets up there. He might have to talk some shit or something like that, but, I mean, at this point, Johnny Hendricks is, he's definitely top five. With that knockout, definitely catapulted himself to top five. But not by much, you know?
Yeah, I kind of have him. I'll say more on it after the main event. It'll explain a little bit more. But the pattern he's got right now on this five-fight win streak, it's like he had a knockout on the night, and then he had a split decision. Knockout of the night, split decision. Knockout of the night. So we'll see how his next one goes. All right,
definitely. And it depends on who they put him up against. I mean, the only thing that's getting real tough about this division is that, like, the names that are at their top, they're actually fighting each other, which is actually going to make a lot of open space. You know, like, When you're next to the top and you know you're not ready to fight the top, who do you really fight? You know? I'm not going to make the same anecdote that I always make, but the last thing that Johnny Hendricks wants to do is one, stay on the shelf, but then he doesn't just want to take any fight. So he's kind of in a rock and a hard place because he's not going to be the number one contender just yet, but he doesn't want to go against just some freaking Tim Biech who's a freaking nobody to me, and lose. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough spot for him. His wins have been really, really good against some solid names. But it's like he's running, you know, the names are getting kind of short. Maybe Carlos Condit he could fight or something like that, possibly. I mean, there's so many names that we can just put on that ballot box to go against Johnny Hendricks.
Speaking of Carlos Condit, our main event, the interim welterweight champion, if you want to call it, natural born killer Carlos Condit, taking on the welterweight champ, George Rush St. Pierre, coming back from that ACL injury, 19 months since his last fight. And Condit, this first round, he patiently circled around GSP, looking to strike from a distance. GSP used that jab early. 2 minutes into the fight, he gets a takedown. Condit was working for some submissions off his back, but St. Pierre stayed in complete control, opening up Condit above his right eye with a nasty elbow. I mean, he looked just like old GSP. Second round, he stayed out of Condit's striking range. I mean, Condit was just hitting wind. St. Pierre got another strong takedown, landed a lot of punches. Condit again working for submissions, but was just getting no luck. Third round, the round that everybody said, oh, shit. Condit dropped GSP with this crazy left hand kick, quickly winning the upset finish, but he couldn't keep St. Pierre down, who pushed forward, got back to his feet, took Condit down, held him there for the remainder of the round. I mean, that was pretty much Condit's one shot to do it, and he couldn't get it done. In that fourth round, St. Pierre immediately moved in for another takedown. Condit worked hard, striking elbows and punches from the bottom position. He threatened GSP with arm bars, knee bars, triangle chokes, but St. Pierre was just like, nah, fool, you know who the fuck I am. He ain't submitting me. Fifth round, pretty much GSP jabbing the shit out of Condit, getting the takedown late in the round. George St. Pierre awarded the unanimous decision in this fight of the night performance. Two judges gave him all 5 rounds. One judge gave 1 round to Condit, obviously that third round. But GSP tying Matthews with the most welterweight title defense is at 7. Oh, man. What do you think about GSP's performance coming back from that late scare in that third round?
Man, what a fight. This fight was so good. I want to kill it, Clarkson, to basically come out and do the freaking interview. And not even do the interview.
Awesome.
Just say, a moment like this, because it was a moment. This was just 4 rounds of just beautiful moments. What happened with freaking with Carlos Condit? He said he was going to do all of this stuff. I'm going to go for the legs. I'm going to shoot. I'm going to take him down. I'm going to outstrike him. I'm going to out everything. He didn't outdo shit. He had 1 spectacular magic kick in round number, was that 4, Johnny, or was that 3 where that miraculous almost ending kick came from?
Third round.
So that means for 4 other rounds, he was just getting fucking mauled. He was getting laid on by a freaking bear. I was hoping that George St. Pierre shaved his chest like 2 weeks before so he could have the mother freaking 007 James Bond freaking Sean Connery chest and just lay that shit across his face. All the stuff that Carlos Condit trained for, that he planned for, that he aimed for, was straight garbage. It was useless, nullified, nothing. Did you see George St. Pierre? That kid was beefed up like he was freaking on some roids. There's this little machine that George St. Pierre markets on TV. I don't even remember the freaking name of that shit. I think it's you connected to your wall, and he's like, this is my name. I am George St. Pierre, and I represent this shit. Whatever the hell he uses to work out, I want to work out with. I mean, this guy was freaking beefed up. He went from like 125-pound welterweight to freaking heavyweight in just 1 fight. It was beautiful. I mean, it was literally nothing that Carlos Condit could do to answer just the onslaught of violence by George St. Pierre. The thing about George St. Pierre is before this fight, he didn't really have exactly a killer instinct to really just knock you out in the fight. Every punch, every kick that I saw out of freaking GSP, George St. Pierre, it looked like he was looking to end this fight. I could see at least two or three times where Carlos Condit was just knocked down. I mean, where he was just not just knocked down physically, but just dejected. There was nothing he could do to answer this. He tried to outstrike him. He tried to counterstrike him, backstrike. There was no takedowns. The only takedowns were all inflicted by GSP. Carlos Condit, as I say quite a few times, Carlos Condit should have stayed his punk ass young ass home. He was in no way, shape, or form ready for this shit. This was not Dan Hardy who he just knocked the shit out of. This was not the Carlos Condit of old. This is a new Carlos Condit that needs to change his shit and bring it back to knock the shit out of people. This definitely knocked Carlos Condit down. Wow, how many pegs? Shit, off the freaking ladder, you know? This was a terrible performance by Carlos Condit. He gave it everything he had, which that's why it wasn't that terrible, but he gave it all. He put everything in that octagon for those five rounds, and at the end, it was not even significant. I mean, and that's the worst part about it, is that nothing he really did was significant, except for that third-round kick. And after that third-round kick, GSP, you know, he took the kick. Oh, that shit hurt. Let me get up. And let me land some more strikes. At the end of the fight, these freaking two guys looked, I mean, it was terrible. There were so many punches to the face by both of them. Their faces just, if you thought Mark Hominick's face was bad, those two faces together were like 80 times worse. This was like Fight of the Night. I mean, there was no contender for Fight of the Night. This was your Fight of the Evening, for sure. I mean, just like we had Shitty Fighter of the Week, this was basically the good performance of the week. I mean, maybe after every round, they had that dude that I just talked about at the beginning of the show saying, let me bang, because, damn it, they bang like warriors. I mean, I didn't see a whole lot of this was not a Demetrius Johnson fight. There was no running around a ring, no Dominic Cruz, no emulation to any famous boxers or anything like that. These were two motherfuckers that just didn't like each other and just wanted to beat the brakes off of each other. And we got to see 25 of the most beautiful minutes you might see. This is a really good contender to, you know, we talked about Dan Henderson and Shogun Rua. That was an inspiring, beautiful, lovely kind of fight. But this fight is definitely, is working its way past that. I mean, for a person that hasn't been watching fighting for 2012, if you haven't, those are the two fights that I highly recommend that you watch. This fight right here, GSP and Carlos Condit, as well, if you go back to Dan Henderson, Shogun Rua. This was five rounds of just a man who was injured, who came back from his injury bigger, stronger, fucking $6 million man. We can rebuild this motherfucker stronger, faster, throwing fucking oranges under the freeway. This guy was beautiful. This was lovely. I enjoyed every minute of the fight. The good points, the bad points. If I never see a fight like this again, I'll be glad that I was able to see this fight. This was a heavy, this was really good. I thoroughly enjoyed it in ways I could never tell you. But the ways I can tell you, I think, are pretty good. It's worth the time I gave to it. It deserved every second I gave this fight.
Yeah, GSP had the second most wins in the UFC with 17 after that. He's now on a 9-fight win streak. They talked to him after the fight on what he planned to do next. And, of course, they have to bring up the matchup that people have been talking about for at least 4 years now, the super fight between him and Silva, Anderson Silva, that is, or whether he was going to stay the welterweight division. There's a couple more challenges. Dana White actually said Johnny Hendricks is like the number one contender right now. And also, GSP said he wants to take a little vacation, which I thought was hilarious because you just had 19 months off. I mean, I know you're nursing injury and all, but come on, man. You don't really need a vacation. I mean, maybe a couple of months or so, and then we'll see what happens. Dana White's supposed to be talking to Anderson Silva sometime next week to see what he wants to do. He says he wants to fight Johnny Hendricks. if he is officially the number one contender, he wants to take the route of all those other crazy people like Carlos Condit and Rashad Evans and hold on to that contendership until he gets a shot at the belt, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. But he is in his own right after beating three of the top contenders in the division. But that's crazy. Man, I don't know what the next direction is going to be, but we'll more than likely find out fairly soon. And speaking of dudes waiting out for a title shot, Dominic Cruz isn't ready to fight. So it's been announced that interim bantamweight champion Henan Burrell will defend that interim title against Michael McDonald. That is going to be a good-ass fight.
Yeah, I'm hoping that fight itself gives me just something to keep note of. You know, because I just talked about this beautiful, lovely five rounds of just miraculous destruction and beauty. And then I talked about another fight. Hopefully I can give the you said that. What's that, 125, right? No. Demetrius Johnson is. Yeah, so that'd be 125, the flyweight. So I want to make sure that I get all my that my shit is right. Okay, I'm right. Just double checking. Yeah, 125 is going to be crazy. I'm hoping that this fight right here I can put on the top of my list. Michael McDonald is just a powerhouse. He gives you some really good fights. And then Henan Burrell, we know what happened in his last fight. I mean, he makes brand new fighters look like straight up chumps. So I mean, this is definitely something I'm heavily, heavily looking forward to. You know, I mean, this is going to be a tough year. Like, when 2013 comes, we're going to talk about the 2012 Fighters of the Year. It's going to be like freaking splitting hairs. These fights are so good so far.
Yeah.
But now, after the fight, after this specific fight of Carlos Condit and GSP, some douchebag decided to get on Twitter and hit up my boy, you know, hit up Joe St. Pierre. And what did this fucking douche nobody say? He says, I am not impressed with your performance. Who the fuck are you to say that you're not impressed with GSP's performance? You know what we're talking about, right?
Oh, yeah. The guy who got beat by the guy that GSP dominated. Nick Diaz, we've said it many times. He needs to just shut the fuck up already. Like, really, he has nothing to say. He's a good fighter. You know, he's a good fighter. I'll give him that. But he really needs to shut his mouth because he had his shot and he fucking lost. I thought it was one of the most bullshit-ass fights I've ever seen, but he still lost. And then you're going to retire, and then you're going to test and get suspended. You're going to piss dirty and then get suspended for a year, and now all of a sudden you're back. And now rumors going around that you're fighting Koscheck, and you still want to talk shit about George. It's like, come on, man. You're going to end up just like everybody else in that division. You're going to get your ass kicked because the trash talker is not going to get to him.
This is going to be beyond an ass whooping. Nick Diaz has basically signed his he signed his own waiver to get the shit kicked out of him. Before Nick Diaz popped dirty, and that's understandable. Weed is a wonderful drug, says people that smoke weed. Remember, guys, I don't smoke, I don't drink, but I've heard that weed is a wonderful drug. Okay, that's fantastic that you did the drug. But now that you're sober, now that you've been off the drugs, off the weed for about a year, why are you still running your mouth as if you're still on the weed? Do we need to drug test you right now? Basically, can we drug test some of these guys on Twitter for some of the bullshit that's coming out of their mouth? George St. Pierre already wants to just beat the life out of this guy. The thing we know about George St. Pierre is that he doesn't really knock people out, but he beats the shit out of them worse than a knockout. Nick Diaz is somebody who he wants to knock out. So if this fight was to happen, I guarantee you he will be punching brick walls. He will be training with Superman, fucking the Hulk, the Human Torch, whatever it takes to just knock this motherfucking guy out. Nick Diaz has been knocked out before, whereas I haven't seen George St. Pierre being knocked out in quite a few years. He hasn't lost, and this is his ninth, right? His ninth time or ninth fight or some shit like that as a champion or something along those lines. Nick Diaz is a good fighter. Don't get me wrong. He's really good with his strikes. You know, his Gracie jiu-jitsu is like next to nobody and all of that good stuff. He's good at what he does. But George St. Pierre is a whole different caliber of fighter. Like no fighter you've ever fought against. You know, I mean, in my honest opinion, you can take it or leave it. The most recent fight that Nick Diaz had was against the guy who beat you. So, yeah, he can run all of his mouth all he wants to. It's going to be like Chael Sonnen walking into Anderson Silva's house, smacking his wife on the buttocks and asking her to make a steak. Do you know what happens when you say some stupid shit like that? Do you remember what happened when he said that shit? He got kneed in the chest. He ripped his dude's chest cavity open and took his heart out and said, look at that shit. Look at your heart beat. They didn't watch it stop. It was beautiful. So I'm actually hoping that Nick Diaz continues to talk the same crap that he's talking so GSP can just get bulked up even more, get even angrier, and just really stop a mud hole in this dude. Stone Cold 316, you know? Taking it there. I'm taking it there.
Man.
What about me? These fucking guys with this sense of entitlement. I'm sorry, Johnny, but all I ever hear is what about me? What about Bob? What about love? Don't ask me what about you. You need to work your goddamn way up to a title. Everybody's trying to shit talk their way to a title. It doesn't take physical talent to talk shit and get a title shot. That just makes you a fucking douchebag. I don't even like Tim Beach. He's a piece of shit. But if he wins his next fight, then I'm going to have to hear this fucker talking shit, talking about I'm better than everybody. That's a piece of shit, too. I don't want to put Nick Diaz in this category, but damn it, he done laid down the fucking bearskin rug, and he's laying down next to Tim Beach on a fucking Coca-Cola fucking Save the Polar Bears fucking polar bearskin rug. I ain't happy about that. But I can't change it. I'm not fighting Nick Diaz, nor am I fighting GSP, because I'm not trying to die tonight. Ah, good rant. Good rant.
All right, man. SUFC 154. Let's talk about some Bellator. It's Bellator 81. Oh, man. Prelims.
Hey, Johnny, before we get into it, can we check the phone lines and see if we've got any activity?
I've been checking like every 5 minutes. There's nothing there.
Sounds good. Okay. Rock and roll.
On it. Yeah, Ruben Ray to see it. Robbie LaRoque by unanimous decision. One judge scored it 30-27. Matt Bessett defeated Paul Carroll, also by unanimous decision. Two judges scored it 30-27. Brennan Ward defeated Sam McCoy by first-round knockout, 249 mark. Mike Muccitelli defeated Matt Udy by first-round submission via armbar, 26 seconds into the fight. I actually wasn't able to see that. It was ridiculous. Murad Machaviev defeated Laurent T. Nelson by unanimous decision. All three judges scored a 30-27. Dan Kramer defeated Joe Lemorix by first-round TKO at the 326 mark. And Andrew Calandrelli defeated Eric Brown by second-round submission via armbar at the 310 mark. The main card, Perry Filthy Filkins took on Jonas Gilstein. This is a middleweight matchup. Filkins won this fight by unanimous decision. One judge scored a 30-27. Let's see. Perry, in this first round, landed more shots, mostly left hands. Jonas continued to move forward, but all he was doing was moving forward in the punches. The second round, Gilstein used a lot of leg kicks, but still eating punch after punch like it's some dumbass idiot. He landed a few of his own. It was kind of like a back-and-forth striking exchange in that round. But Filkins was still having it up their hand. Third round, they're slugging it out. Perry was wooing him on like he was Ric Flair or something. Jonas shot for a takedown. Perry was the one that ended up on top. Not much happened, just a Kimura attempt by Jonas. Perry was able to escape it. Back standing, it was Filkins
striking was just enough. You know, Perry stuffed a takedown late in the round, got him out, and started raining down shots. It was pretty easy for the judges to score the fight for him. What did you think about it, Cole?
That shit was hilarious. I mean, normally when you hear about somebody going, woo, getting all excited, somebody who just takes the punches to the face and just delivers more, you usually associate that with somebody who's pretty much losing those two rounds. This was not the case. Filkins was definitely making that magic happen. I don't know what the hell they're smoking in New Hampshire, but damn it, I want some of it. Can we legalize weed in New Hampshire? Because he was in a whole nother world. I mean, the punches that he started eating towards the end of the third round by Bilstein, they were getting kind of strong. I mean, you can realize after he got a little excited and said, keep on punching me, he said, wait a second. He's starting to push me a little hard. Let me take him down. I mean, Filkins impressed me. Not with the bullshit, not with the antics, but just with his resolve. Because, I mean, he was looking good throughout the entire fight. Jonas Bilstein looked like just straight, utter garbage. I mean, this was definitely like, it was bad. Bilstein, when he was looking really good, he was undefeated for quite a long time. From like 2009 into late 2010, he was undefeated. Then he came to Bellator. He didn't come to Bellator. He actually fought in this place called Heroes Gate. He fought this guy at Tilave. We talked about him about 2 weeks ago because he had a fight where he just beat the life out of somebody. I always mention names like that, the Attila Vays and stuff, just to help associate everybody. But Jonas Bilstein, he was a great name. He was a German powerhouse from Cologne. He was making some magic happen, and then he met Bellator fighters and just got the shit kicked out of him 3 out of 4 times. And I'm including this one. This was just a straight destruction. I mean, he was fighting as if he had no place in the ring. This was your main card fight, and I could have thought I could have put at least 3 fights to take the place of this one. Dan Kramer, Joseph Lamoureux, I would have rather had seen that one. I mean, just the knockouts, the arm bars. This was not a good fight for Bilstein. This was not worth watching because it was really just 3 rounds of some guy getting his ass kicked. And then the third round, Filkins, he basically dominated the fight so much that he could show off. I mean, honestly, the only way that Jonas Bilstein could have won this fight would have been to knock him out. And Filkins gave him every opportunity in that third round. He said, you want to hit me? Hit me. Knock me out. After the fight, he got on the mic with Jimmy Smith, who was a fantastic commentator. And he said, this is what I do in the gym. Maybe more fighters need to get punched in the face in the gym because he wasn't fazed by, like, 90% of those punches. So, I mean, that guy's got a pretty tough-ass jaw, Perry Filkin. This fight was just going to get you ready for this next season. This is 185, so that'd be the middleweight. It would not be good to put him up against a strong middleweight right now because he would literally get destroyed doing those antics. If he was to go up against somebody in that weight class, I'm trying to think of a name. We just talked about the middleweights. I'm trying to think of a name. Who's the dude who's carrying them big old bottles of? Who's carrying those big old water bottles?
Ryan Rogers.
His nickname is Cupcake.
Cupcake? No, that was somebody else. That was Lloyd Woodard.
Say it again?
The dude you're referring to with the water, that was Brian Rogers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say don't give him Brian Rogers, like, for example. Don't give him somebody who would love that. Imagine putting somebody like him up against a Brian Rogers. It would be just a knee to the face, end of the fight, and he would basically, in the about 5 minutes after he woke up, they would say, how do you feel? He would say, woo, woo. You know, I love Ric Flair. It seems to be who he was trying to emulate. Him going against a tough name would be what happens when you punch Ric Flair really hard. He takes 3 steps standing up, then he falls flat on his face to the ground. Filkins got a good win, but this is not really going to cement. It's not going to get. I'm not looking at this win as anything of notoriety. It's not going to get him to the top. At least I hope not.
Yeah. It's taking too long.
Our next one we had, this was a featherweight contest between Dustin the Beast Nice, the Ultimate Fighter alum, taking on the Gladiator Marlon Sandro, two-time featherweight tournament finalist. Sandro landed his nice left hook, got Nice to the ground. Nice worked for submissions, guillotine choke, heel hooks. Sandro fought them all off, got the back, locked in a rear naked choke. Nice refused to tap. So Sandro's all like, oh, I got no problem choking your ass out unconscious. And that's exactly what he did. Sandro wins by technical submission, the 205 mark of the first round. That was sweet. He wasted no time. And how do you feel about Sandro's performance?
It was beautiful. I mean, it was a fantasy. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot that happened in the fight, but what happened was just of incredible nature. Marlon Sandro is definitely a submission magician, technician, whatever ition you can put a word behind it. Marlon Sandro. I'm just, because actually I had a whole bunch of stuff that was on my mind. Because as I recall, he comes from a Sengoku. He was a Sengoku champion. And he's been in Bellator for like two solid years. And I think more than once he was a finalist in his weight class of 145 and he's featherweights. Every loss that he had, because Daniel Strauss, I mean, literally just stomped a mud hole in his ass. And then if you go back to 2011, Pat Curran kicked him in the head and just knocked him unconscious. He's learning from his losses. Marlon Sandro is just, his nickname is the Gladiator, and it's a great nickname. He came out with the freaking Gladiator helmet that the UFC decided to retire. I was wondering what happened to that shit. So he stole it from UFC, and now he's rocking it. He looked fantastic. I mean, that submission was, he put that shit on so crazy. Because he didn't just put it on. It's like he was, I think he was on the bottom and he just slipped it. He slipped to the top. And once he got his arms around those necks, because it could have been three necks. But once he got his arms around that neck, Dustin Nice was a remnant of himself in the past. Dumbass didn't want to tap out. Look at this fool. Just think, this guy has 23 wins, Dustin Nice. His 19 losses are starting to catch up. He lost to Brian Caraway, rear naked choke. He lost to David Love, armbar. And now he has lost to Marlon Sandro. By what? By rear naked choke. All that goes to show me about a person like Dustin Nice is that he's not training correctly. He has not learned a good submission defense, so he gets submitted. You know who I'm thinking of right now? I'm thinking of Melvin Gillard.
Of course.
You know why? Because if a dog is that old that you can't teach him new tricks, if the horse doesn't want to drink the water that you put in front of him, you get a bow, you take him out, you grab your rifle, and you make some glue. Dustin Nice, it's a glue time, buddy. 19 losses? Yeah, either he's going to have to learn some submission defense or retire. Because there was somebody who retired. It's not a bad thing to retire, especially with the wins and losses he has, 23-19. It wouldn't be too bad if he retired. If you can't learn, it's time to go, buddy.
Let's move on. So, we had our lightweight small. Ricardo Trelawney taking off the fugitive, Dave Jensen. This was pretty close striking match throughout all three rounds. Jensen had the upper hand in the first when he dropped Trelawney with a left hook, but Trelawney recovered quickly. Wasn't much that he did in that round. The second round, Trelawney and Jensen were just giving each other knuckle sandwiches the entire time. Trelawney, I felt, had the upper edge in that round. He was able to land more strikes than Jensen. The third round, Trelawney pushed the pace, landed some solid shots. Jensen, he didn't back down, though. the striking, I really thought Terlone was doing the better job in the last two rounds. But they award this fight to Dave Jensen by split decision. I did not see him winning this fight. I didn't. What about you, Cole?
Not even fucking close. I mean, Jensen gave us a really powerful first round. Did they give this guy fucking 10-7, Dave Jensen? Dave Jensen. How? How did he win this? I mean, it was a good fight, don't get me wrong. But as soon as the first 5 minutes were over, they did their minute, Terlone came out like a fucking man possessed. Crazy counter left hand jabs connecting. I mean, there was so much connection by Ricardo Terlone. I thought I was looking at a fucking Verizon commercial. Did he fucking have bars? He must have had like infinite bars in that second and third round. I have no clue how. No clue how they gave Jensen this decision. It was a great fight, don't get me wrong. It might even been fight of the night. Whether it was or not, I don't really give two shits about it. It was a really good fight. The judges are really just effing everything up. You, John, if you see a 29-28 for Terlone, I see a 29-28 for Terlone, and I don't give a fuck what the third person around judge has to say. That's straight retarded.
Yeah.
I mean, Terlone did not give up. Most fighters, after getting a beating like that in the first round, they slow down, they give up, they change their game plan to something that nobody wants, and they try to pitch out a decision. Terlone kept going. He broke the will. I watched him break Dave Jansen's will. And Terlone, he's not a young fighter. He's been fighting quite a few years. He's not a kid. He's not 20. He's up there in age. He's 29 years old, but he's got 18 really, really, really tough fights. He's had three fights already in 2012 so far. This is just straight nonsense. This is the craziest nonsense. This is even more crazy than the decision they gave to Filthy Tom Lawler. You know, in my honest opinion. But the way I'm looking at it, there is a silver lining to all of this. They might have gave Dave Jensen the win, but they gave him the win so he can get the shit kicked out of him in his next fight. Like, in his next fight, he's not even going to be close. He is going to get beat so bad. He is going to get beat so tough. This might be the shortest fight in Bellator history. I mean, I know Hector Lombard and who is that freaking guy?
Jay Silva.
Right now, at the current moment, that's the shortest fight in Bellator history. I think in this fight that's coming up, Dave Jensen is going to get destroyed. Now, I guarantee you, Johnny, that that's not how it's going to happen. I 99% guarantee you that this is probably going to be a long-ass, boring-ass fight. But I would love to see the person who fights Dave Jensen, and we know who it is. It would just be lovely to see him beat the life out of him.
Yeah, and that, that leads us to the main event. Dave Jensen, he's so ridiculous, I can't even say his name right. He'll meet the winner of the Marcin Held Rich Nola Clemente fight. This fight, Clemente coming into his 68th career fight. And when Rich Clemente made his debut, they had to point it out that Marcin Held was 7 years old at the time. I don't know why they think that's so important, but whatever. The first round was extremely awkward, striking. They hit the mat. They were fighting for a position. Both of them looking for leg locks. Three of the last five fights for Held ended by a leg lock submission. This is not a guy you want playing with your feet. I mean, Rich tried to improve his submission. Held attempted a knee bar. He started to crank. And it looked pretty damn painful, but he wasn't in that good enough position to execute it, and Clemente was able to hold on. Second round, Rich took him down right away. They scrambled again. Held got a hold of the toe. It didn't take much for Rich to tap. I mean, he cranked the shit out of it. So Marcin Held won this fight by a toe hold. Second round, at the 304 mark, he'll meet Dave Jensen in the finals. And it's just been announced, I believe, today that Rich Clemente is finally retiring. He finishes his career 13 years with a record 45 wins, 22 losses, one draw. He's started off his career 0-2, then 3-5, then 4-6, and I'm not going to go all crazy into it, but guys had a long career. He's fought for Bellator, Titan FC, Dream, Score Fighting Series, and of course the UFC. He's had fights with guys like Sam Stout, Terry Adam, Brett Maynard, Clayton Tebow, Melvin Gillard, Anthony Johnson, Dean Thomas. I could be here all day. But
yep,
27,
he's had fights.
27
he's had
of his
fights.
Wins came by submission.
Yeah.
80% of his victories were finishes, which is nice, but still 45-22. It was about time he hung the gloves up.
Yeah, I'm not even mad about that. He's had more fights than I've had years of life, you and me, Johnny, not combined, but separately. So, yeah. He's had the goods. He's had the bads. But yeah, I don't think he realized who he was going against in Marcin Held. Now, when they came into the ring, they had this pre-fighter interview. It was beautiful. Marcin Held is a horrible English speaker. I mean, I love Chris Cyborg, but remember, she speaks straight Brazilian. Marcin Held is a close second. He said that was the fight. And he's Russian, so he was like, I'm going to take the fight. He said he wants to win the title. He's got to win the title. He wants to give a gift to his mother. I mean, he was set to make some miraculous, magical, miracle, walk on water, red water, wine, some type of stuff happen. Marcin Held right now is unfreaking defeated. Undefeated. He's not lost. No, wait. What the hell am I talking about? He's 15-2, but in Bellator. Let's go in Bellator. His last loss was to Michael Chandler in 2011, but in his past 5 fights. I said undefeated, and I was wrong. But that's the way he fought. Marcin Held came out as if he's never lost a fight in his entire life. I mean, he heel hooks, toe holds. Do not leave him around your leg. Marcin Held, again, his record is 15-2 for those who caught me mess up on that one. He trains like he fights with Imanari. And you know, Imanari is my favorite submission fighter of all time. But Marcin Held is my favorite submission fighter in Bellator for sure. I mean, besides that, the upside-down triangle by Toby Imada, I believe that was the guy who gave us that one. That's the only submission that's even close to Marcin Held. Marcin Held going to knock out Dave Jensen? Probably not. That's why I said what I said. But I definitely see this fight as ending before those retarded, garbage, asshole judges get to screw it up. Because if those judges get those hands on any decision, they're going to mess it up. Whether you're in Bellator, whether you're in Strikeforce, wherever you go, judges are garbage. I keep saying how bad these judges are, but they don't fix it, Johnny. They don't fix the problem. There have been like 25 fights just in the UFC that have went in the hands of the judges and went clearly the wrong way. At least 25. But they keep doing it, Johnny. They don't change. They don't fix the problem. You do all this training, 2-3 months, you get injured, you get uninjured, you fix yourself, just to get fucked by a judge. If I wanted to get fucked by a judge, I would go to the club, I would get you a drink, a couple of drinks, I would take you to the hotel room, and then we could do all of that. But no, they're not doing all of that. They make it happen in the octagon. This is fucking rape, dude. This is rape, what these judges are doing. And they're not getting a pass from me, Johnny. Judges deserve no credit. No credit. They have screwed up how many decisions just on this show itself? They've screwed up who? Two. That's terrible.
We could be here all day talking about judges, man.
That's why I stopped, Johnny.
Yeah, that's Bellator 81. But a couple more decisions to throw people's way. Ultimate Fighter 16, Team Nelson versus Team Carwin. They had their quarterfinal fight. Team Carwin teammate Bristol Runde took on Neil Magny. Magny won this fight by unanimous decision.
Bristol. Who won?
Magny. Bristol lost.
No!
Neil hurt him a couple of times in the fight. Took him down. I mean, he just worked him on the ground. It wasn't even close, man. Yeah, the second fight, Team Carwin's Igor Arroyo took on Colton Smith of Team Nelson. And Smith just dominated the fight. He took Igor down, attempted some chokes, went for a leg a couple of times. He was mostly just working for submission and just playing excellent striking on the ground. Easily picked up the decision win. So Team Nelson now leads 5-4 over Carwin. And this Friday, I should say, the last two fights, Team Nelson teammates Joey Rivera and John Manley will face each other. And Team Nelson's Michael Hill will take on fellow Canadian Mike Ritchie. Wow, the Ultimate Fighter.
Wait, you said that this Friday, Johnny?
Yeah.
Damn.
Ultimate Fighter is smashy.
It happened so fast, that's all.
they had the semifinals matchups announced for the lightweights. It's Team UK's Norman and Brendan will take on each other. And Team UK's Colin will take on Team Australia's Richie. During training, Mike Wilkinson suffered a retina tear, was slightly detached, and it required surgery. So that's how his teammate Richie was able to get the spot they awarded to Team Australia. Because of the whole bullshit with the phone and everything. But the one fight that happened was between the welterweights from Team UK. Brad Scott took on Team Australia's Benny Alloway. Brad Scott won his fight by a split decision. This was a crazy fight. It was back and forth on the feet in the first round. Brad was out striking him. The second round was a little bit of the same, except Benny, he was able to get Brad down, didn't do a whole lot there. Third round was almost a mirror image of the first. Close fight, but they made the right decision. And yeah, that Ultimate Fighter for you. Yep.
Nice. Now, you had just said, Johnny, you had just said that the American Ultimate Fighter finale is this Friday?
No, I said their fight, the next fight.
Oh, okay. Just wanted to double check because I got lost for a second in that one.
Oh, no, we're about...
I said that, Johnny, is just to make sure because, you know, the injury bug done struck again, and I wanted to make sure that just in case the fight decided to have yet another fighter. We actually didn't get into that last week. Now, we don't have to get into it this week. We can get into it next week if you so choose. It's up to you,
well,
Johnny.
We're already on the topic, so we don't have to really go deep into it. Just let everybody know what happened. Carwin was forced out of the fight he's going to have with Nelson, which takes place, is that December 8th, 7th? I can't remember. It's back-to-back days. One's on Friday, one's on Saturday. But, you know, Shane Carwin will be replaced by Matt Mitrione.
Why?
Why? That's the question.
Are you giving Matt Mitrione? Is Matt Mitrione a bad fighter? No, he's a decent fighter, but Roy Nelson has got like three times as many fights as he does.
Yeah,
Matt
I don't Mitchell understand.
Is really, it's a terrible idea. They didn't want to give Chet Congo to Roy Nelson because Chet Congo didn't want to get the shit kicked out of him. Understood? But come on, Roy Nelson, Matt Mitrione? I'm trying to remember. Weren't they on the same season, Matt Mitrione and Roy Nelson?
Oh, yeah. They were both on Ultimate Fighter seasons. And, no, they didn't fight each other.
Yeah, well,
see, Mitrione,
during that,
they would have fought each other if Mitrione didn't get injured. He had to pull out of competition.
How is this fight going to happen? This fight is on December 15th. This is when the fight is going to happen. They chose, of all the fighters in the universe, he decided Matt Mitrione. His career on The Ultimate Fighter was not that illustrious. You know, he was a former NFL player for some team who I don't give two shits about. Okay. So he was a former football player, and he learned how to fight. That's nice. Roy Nelson, during that entire season, I do believe it was, what season was that, season 10, Johnny?
Yes.
The heavyweights?
Yes, season 10.
Roy Nelson laid on, like, five dudes. He laid on dudes like Dakota Cochrane. He laid on dudes like Nick Ring. So now you're going to give us a live show of Roy Nelson laying on some 10 minutes. You thought John Fitch was bad. Roy Nelson is not just going to lay on Matt Mitrione. He's going to lay on him and punch him in the face. I got a feeling that Roy Nelson is going to beat Matt Mitrione by damn crucifix. I haven't seen a crucifix in the UFC in a very long time. And I think that with this fight right here, this is the one that we are going to see. I'm almost to the point, Johnny, of boycotting this shit. I'm this close, Johnny, to boycotting this entire event. Especially, that's fucking it. That's it. Look at this shit. Melvin Gillard, automatic boycott. I'm not going to watch this shit. You hear me, everybody? I'm not fucking watching this shit. You got Pat Barry, and he'll be a good fight. I might watch that one. But I'm not going to watch Melvin Gillard get the shit kicked out of him by Jamie Varner. I don't even care if Melvin Gillard beats Jamie Varner. Jamie Varner is like a nobody right now. Don't y'all forget what I just said. I don't care who wins out of Jamie Varner or Melvin Gillard. I know Matt Mitrione is going to lose, and I'm sorry to say that. Jonathan Brookins is going to get the shit kicked out of him by Justin Poirier. Like, I'm not happy about this card at all. This is in the UFC, Johnny. This is not in Pan-American Pacific Fighting Championships. This is not extreme fucking organization. This is USC, and this is what you're giving us? I keep having this conversation, Johnny. I keep having it. This is straight garbage. The fights they are giving us is Strikeforce Challengers caliber. At this point, I would rather see a Strikeforce Challengers fight. I would rather watch the M1 that just recently happened than watch this fight that's happening on December 15th. 10 people are going to watch this show, Johnny. And that's because they get paid to watch the show. Do you know the 10 people? The 3 judges, the 2 refs, and the fucking commentators and the fighters. Those are the only people that are going to watch that fight. Does it equate to 10? I don't even know. That's terrible, Johnny. Well, what is your take on this entire event? This UFC Ultimate Fighter 16 finale, do you think it's going to be good?
I haven't looked at it really, but it's free, so fuck it. I'm just going to watch it anyway. Because there's been cards where fighters were seem to be stacked, where it's like, oh, it's going to be a great fight, it's going to be a great fight, and it ended up being horrible. So it can go either way. I don't want to get into it, though. That's like a month away, so we'll worry about it then. I'm pretty sure there'll be a couple more injuries.
What you say, Johnny?
I'm pretty sure there'll probably be a couple more injuries anyways.
Oh, yeah.
Between now and
I was you messed me up, Johnny, though. Because, you know, you already gave out the Bad Fighter of the Week award. Now, don't get me wrong. It was a very worthy candidate. But I wanted to take everybody on a little trip. It looks like this happened in the Philippines, the Smart Araneta Arena Coliseum. Now, if you haven't seen this specific fight, the name of the fighter is Ali Cali. That's his name. He went up against some guy named Erwin Tagli. This was the worst fight I've seen this entire year. Now, PXC is Pacific Extreme Combat. This was their 34th event. And this dude, Ali Cali, was very bad. When I say very bad, you know, I talk about Michael Page and the bullshit that he does and makes me want to punch him in the face. Ali Cali did it 2 times worse. Every time, Johnny, that I try to find somebody to just hate, to just loathe, to despise, they create, there's a fight that happens that gives me an even worse fight. Ali Cali did some of the most bullshit, garbage nonsense I've ever seen. He was, again, trying to emulate a boxing great. It seems to be what a lot of people do when they go against opponents that are just that below you, that are that beneath you. And the worst part about it is that Ali Cali won the fight because the guy Erwin Tagli got hit in the face so many times that he just didn't want to come out in round number 4. That's what made it the worst. So you just get a horrible boxing emulation. You get terrible striking that hardly really landed, garbage-ass takedowns, and then you get the person that retired. Basically, he didn't want to fight. And this fight was for their flyweight championship. So, yeah, this was your horrible fight of the week. Don't watch it. Don't watch it. I pray that you don't watch it. Everything that I've told you is everything you need to know about that specific fight. That is Pacific Extreme Combat 34. I'm almost going to boycott that whole event because it was terrible, man. And I watched it for everybody because I know a lot of people weren't going to watch it, aren't going to watch it, don't care about it. It was not a good event. It was a very bad event. Production value was great. Some of the fights were good. But it seems to be the same thing that happens over there, overseas, like Philippines, India, Mumbai, and all of that stuff. You've got a fighter who's kind of good going against a fighter who's just utterly, disgustingly horrible. That is my whole synopsis of PXC 34. It was utter garbage. The entire event, the card from top to bottom, was just ass.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you what was good though. Legacy Fight Championship 15. This was a, let me see, make sure I don't mess it up. This was a 7-fight main card. 6 of those 7 fights ended in the first round. That was amazing. And the first one was see, Marcus the Barber Dubar took on Matt Dangerschell. And there was a couple of leg kicks thrown. Matt dropped Marcus with a straight right, wrapped his neck, locked in a guillotine. Dubar escaped just to fall into an arm bar. He was forced to tap at the 106 mark of the first round. I believe that was the quickest finish of the night as well. Submission-wise, that is.
Yeah.
Wait, no. That was second quickest. The next one, Patrick Bam Bam Hutton took on Charlie, the American Bad Boy, Ontiveros. And Ontiveros, this guy was crazy. He came out with all these spinning kicks and shit. None of them connected. He slipped and fell on one of them. Hutton got on top of him right and now looking to capitalize, but left his arm out there. Ontiveros tapped him at the 311 mark. First two fights and by first round armbar. The next one, Thomas Del Almeida took on Cody the Wolverine Williams. Cody let his hand go. He was real aggressive, forcing Thomas to strike back, marking his face up. And out of nowhere, Almeida floored him with his big right elbow, followed up with a couple of more punches. It was over. That was one of the sweetest finishes of the night. Jonas Jaguar.
Not for Almeida.
Oh, man. That was just horrible for him.
Dude, Almeida is fantastic. You know he's undefeated right now. His entire career, I'm going to tell you just how long his career is. Predator Fighting Championship, it looks like he knocked this guy out in one punch. Yeah, so one fight, 1 minute and 32 seconds. His entire fight career doesn't span 15 minutes. Almeida is a knockout specialist. Man, that was beautiful to watch. And he does it all the time. That seems to be what he does. If he's not guillotine choking you or armbarring you, he's going to knock you out. And it's going to be within the first round. For somebody like Almeida, when he gets out of the first round, I'll give him some credit. But what he does in that first round usually makes for a very short fight. 7-0.
That's really just sweet, man. And that's just two fights in. Next with John Kirk, the Jaguar. John Kirk took on Bubba Bush. Bush wasted no time getting the fight to the ground. He got in that crucifix position, like you just mentioned a while ago, landing all these elbows and punches to the face. Referee finally had to stop at the 218 mark. It's just ridiculous. Once you get in that position, you don't get out. A lot of people look at it differently. Like, oh, he wasn't even hurting them. It doesn't fucking matter if he's hurting them. Roy Nelson pointed this out in The Ultimate Fighter right before he did the same thing in the Kimbo Slice. He said, all you got to do is get that position and just punch away. Hell, he'd be counting his punches all the way up to like 20 or so. Like, ref, I'm like 24 or 25. The referee's going to stop it because you can't defend it. You don't defend it, they're going to stop it. They do not have to hurt. It's the fact that you're taking all these shots and not defending them. That's the best way to describe it. That's it. They don't have to hurt. You're not defending them. That's it.
Yeah, Fairweather fans need to remember the rules. If I'm punching you and you can't defend it, it doesn't matter how many punches or how hard they are. The fight must be stopped. Those are the rules. Nobody says anything when these bullshit judges just screw up, just rape a decision. And then we got certain people, certain individuals saying, oh, the fight should have been stopped earlier. Just shut your fucking mouth. You don't say nothing to these judges, but you want to say something when somebody doesn't fucking die in the octagon? You remember, the referees there kind of save a life. You know, if you're absorbing that many punches, yeah, the fight should be stopped. You just want to see, the bloodlust is getting out of control, Johnny. It's getting out of control. I don't want to see a person die in the octagon. Just lose the fight, ref stop it, and let's all go on with our business. Nobody wants death.
Crazy, man. Our next one, we had Saul Elizondo taking on the chosen one, Angel Huerta. Huerta looked good. He's throwing these kicks all over the damn place. He drops Saul with this big left hook. He looked for a quick stoppage when he tried it. Can't read my own damn words. After that shot that he took, Saul, he's trying to get the damn ref in the triangle choke. Because he's still thinking that's Huerta on top of him. I mean, that's when you know that you're completely out of it. He couldn't even argue the stoppage at the 107 mark of the first round. That shit looked hilarious. I've seen it so many times. A fighter goes out with a punch and they slightly come back and still trying to grapple. But the only problem is they're grappling with the ref, not the fighter. So, hey, come on, dude. You were out.
Yeah, said fight's over. Fight's over. man, that's where Quartz is good right now. He got knocked out back in May 11th, and he didn't avenge that loss, but he definitely gave us a win to help us forget about that loss that he had to Nelson Salas. I'm not even going to add too much to it. It was a good fight. It was a short fight. But hey. It was a good fight nonetheless.
Our next one, this fight tripped me off from the start. Nick the Ghost Gonzalez took on Ray Blodgett. Ray Blodgett decided to come out to something that's very near and dear to my heart. He came out to the Ghostbusters theme.
I thought that was just amazing. I was like, this guy is awesome. He came out the Ghostbusters. I mean, it's like, it kind of makes sense seeing how his opponent, his nickname is the Ghost, but this guy ain't no damn Ghostbusters. I mean, it was a slow start. Ray attacked him with leg kicks, punches to the body. Nick was tagging him. Ray jumped on his back, looked for a rear naked choke. Time expired. I could probably give him that round. The second round was still going for the leg, shot for a takedown. Wasn't able to get it. Nick's striking was looking a lot better. He completely took control of the fight at this point. I mean, it's easy to have it even heading into this third round. Ray looked for the takedown. Gonzalez defended it. He's still moving forward. This fight, it kind of sucks because this fight followed five main card fights that all ended in the first round, and this one was headed for the decision. But it was still a pretty good fight. Nick was just doing amazing on the feet, outstriking Blodgett. Blodgett was going for all these takedowns. All of them were stopped. Nick dropped him late in the round with a right hook, securing him the victory, 29-28, all judges' scorecards. I don't know how you lose coming out the Ghostbusters, man. That's sad.
Well, what can I really say? I can't give that man any credit and explanation. I can't even defend this guy for you. He messed you, I mean, to a song that's near and dear to your heart, and to get really beat like that, yeah. Maybe next time we should just come out to a funeral theme song, because that was a funeral for three rounds.
Like Undertaker or some shit. And our main event, Robert Drysdale, who actually missed weight by, I believe, 5 pounds, took on the Celtic Tiger, Chris Reed. And come on. I mean, all through the night, they had a poll on who you thought was going to win. You just knew who the real fans and supporters of mixed martial arts were and who were the guys just supporting the home guy. I mean, Robert shot for a takedown right away. Got him out, armbar, tap out. Took him 1 minute and 15 seconds in the first round. He's now 5-0, all of them by first round submission. Man, still haven't really seen what he can do in the stand up, but you go to the ground with him, you're done. That's it. How do you feel about Drysdale's performance?
I don't feel the same way I said I was going to feel last week. Yeah, he missed weight by 5 pounds, but did you look at the guy he was going against? It looked like he was going against a freaking midget in the midget toxin contest. He beat the crap out of him. He was way taller. He was way stronger. And really, guy just gave his neck up. I mean, this was a short fight. It was short because the guy gave his neck up. Guy was coming in to lose. I mean, the easiest way to look at it. When you come in to lose, primarily you are going to lose. Chris Reed. Guy had 4 wins and 1 loss. That sucked. For Robert Drysdale, maybe he should need, I don't know. 5 pounds is bad. Wait, because it says he fights at 205. Was this fight at 205 or was it at like 190 at catchweight?
No, it wasn't a catchweight. The guy just said, whatever, let's just fight. So, but they didn't really say if he had to forfeit his purse. I'm pretty sure he did, 20%, but the guy was just whatever
really
the fight.
For Robert Drysdale, it doesn't matter because, I mean, this happened in 1 minute and 15 seconds, and literally Chris Reed did nothing. Chris Reed, I believe he got hit, he laid down, he got armbarred. That was the entire fight. So honestly, if Robert Drysdale wants to give up his card, shit, for all we know, Robert Drysdale purposely says, you know what, I'm going to eat a whole bunch of food because I don't even care. Let this loser get my money so I can keep it moving. Is it a smart decision? No. But hey, sometimes you miss weight. If Robert Drysdale misses weight again, I'm asking jokes. Everybody gets one pass, even your boy. But after about the third time, then we got to talk.
Yeah, this legacy card, 13 fights, only 2 decisions. The one thing that stood out from the prelims, they even showed this on Inside MMA, it was crazy. Caleb Cummings took on Levy West, and the fight was stopped because West vomited in the cage. The second round, the 114 mark. Now, me, I'm not no fighter or nothing. I can't really talk shit about him. I've known people who a lot of fighters have done it, but, like, I've never really – I've heard of it in a fight. I never really seen it like that. It was crazy. I don't know the whole routine and everything or how this would have been prevented or how it happened, but that was just sick, man. He's just like, the ref's like, oh, yeah, you lost, man. I'm sorry. That's it. You can't throw up on my shoes, though. That ain't cool. Man, that's crazy. But there was a lot of, there was a lot of finishes on that, on this entire card, man. Like I said, 13 fights, 11 finishes, and let me see. 8 of them in the first round. That's crazy.
Yeah, all in all, it sounds like it was a pretty good card. I mean, it was. I saw it as well. I saw it. You saw it. Was it better than the UFC card? Not by a damn long shot. But it was pretty. It was good for what you're getting. I mean, I watched it. I liked it.
Yeah, man.
I mean, not as bad as some of the other stuff that we could have saw.
Yeah. And, like, to go over the rest of the prelims, Alex Black defeated Mark Garcia. This was first-round submission. Rear naked choke, 157 mark. Rizan Shaw defeated Colin Wright by an armbar in the second round, the 112 mark. Domingo Plarte defeated Ricardo Delgado by TKO in the first round, 151 mark. Ryan Hollis defeated Will Spiedel by second-round armbar, the 152 mark. And the only other fight to go the distance, this was Mike Gonzalez. He defeated Sean Machado. All three judges scored a 30-27 for him. Oh, man.
Nice.
That would have been nice to see. Yeah, this Friday, Axis TV will be showing Score Fight Series 7. That's pretty much the main thing that's going on this week of MMA. All I'm going to be thinking about is the game tomorrow, Turkey, and we have 4 days off of work. That's awesome.
Not bad. For me, I got to make the magic happen. I got to, you know, go to work, all that good stuff. Since I got a quick second, Johnny, and Colin Victor News, they're going to be some ladies fighting right now. They're fighting as we speak right now. In the tough enough class, because you know today is pre-Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving's Eve, and you have got a beautiful fight card. There are a whole bunch of fights, but I'm only going to talk about a couple of them. Jillian Leibarger is fighting Stephanie Gonzalez. Oh man, if you ever take a look at Stephanie Gonzalez, what? Oh man, so many good things I got to say about her. Then Danielle Mack. She's also going to be fighting a young lady named Mercedes White. For both of them, Danielle Mack and Mercedes White, this is their debut. You know, they're coming out. And then this young lady, Courtney Casey, she's fighting against Rachel Cummins. I've heard her name before.
Yes.
But I just wanted to clue everybody in towards the end of this show that if you are, if you're in the area, why the hell not? Right. That was
yeah,
all.
Man. Another good show. Oh yeah, another reminder. Tomorrow, it should still be on, even though it's Turkey Day. Ultimate Fighter: The Smashy, Episode 10. It's on Tuf.tv, TUF.tv. You can watch all the episodes there. Thank everybody for listening to the show. Especially our listeners last week to help us break records. I want to thank MMA Anonymous, Tyrone, and everybody back at the kitchen. You know, we're doing big things and we ain't stopping. Got anything else?
Oh, yeah, I got one more, Johnny, in this last second. Next week, I'm actually going to start conducting my own my little interviews on SportsCityChefs.com. So if you get a chance, just check out SportsCityChefs.com. and just hear some of the previous interviews, some of the newer interviews, and all that good stuff.
All right, for sure. Definitely going to look out for that. Well, that's the show. Everybody, have a great week. Eat some food. We'll catch you
later. Don't eat too much turducken.